Assalamu alaikum, I'm Zafar Bangash. Welcome to Muslim Perspectives. On June 12th, Iran held its 10th presidential elections. Soon thereafter, there were protests and rallies that there had been rigging in the elections. And there's been massive media coverage with respect to these elections and the rallies and so on. And today I've got three guests who are going to discuss with me exactly what is happening in Iran. To my immediate right is Brother Ali Mallah, who is the Vice President of the Canadian Arab Federation. Next to him is Phil Taylor, a journalist who presents the Taylor Report on CIUT. And next to him is Fayaz Mehdi, who is the director of CASMO. Welcome to the program. I think, first of all, let's look at, we want to make it a free discussion. So there's absolutely, we're not going to go into questions, but let me sort of talk about, to start off with, the turnout in this election was reported to be about 85%. Now, in the past, whenever Iran, for instance, said that the turnout in the elections was 65 or 70%, that there were immediate, dismissals in the Western media, at least, to say, well, no, that number of people had not participated in the elections. But in this election, have you seen any reports where they have questioned the turnout, Brother Ali?
I haven't come across any report or article to dispute the high turnout of the participation in the Iranian election. And almost every single report or news media confirmed that the turnout was between 80 to 85, with much higher than any election we ever had in the USA or in Canada.
In fact, they had to extend the voting time much beyond the cutoff point, Phil, wasn't that they had to extend it almost up to midnight to make sure that people
that everybody could vote,
that everybody could participate in the vote.
The people of Iran decided this was a decisive moment for them, and they practice their rights under their constitution. They get out and choose a leader. I think that's sharp. It's not ordinary for that kind of participation. Not in our culture. Everybody here boasts about our love of democracy, but actually barely 50% of eligible people vote.
Exactly, yes.
And the experts tell us because people don't, frankly, in this culture, believe very much in their vote. But apparently in Iran they do.
Yes. In fact, there have been many polls in the U.S. where, poll after poll suggests that the overwhelming majority of the Americans don't believe that it's going to make much difference in their life whether the Republicans are in power or the Democrats are in power. I mean, in 2006, they gave the majority in Congress to the Democrats, but nothing has changed in terms of policy.
Well, in the U.S., they even had a stolen election, which the American people didn't protest. The first time Bush over Gore, the real story there was the American people simply sat on their hands.
I see this participation in election is also a referendum into the belief of the system. So people in Canada, when they do not turn out, like less than 50%, so this is a referendum how much people actually believe in this democracy and the system. So it was unprecedented in Iranian history that 80 to 85% people come out. So it's not about who they are going to choose, but at least that they believe in the system.
Yeah.
Okay, and then election become a pretext for the so-called Western democracies, that whatever is going on there. So that's why the leader of Islamic Revolution made a point in his last Friday's speech that because they don't want us to celebrate this victory, and this is a real victory over all democracies in the world, that 85% turnout, it's a referendum in believing of that system.
But the main challenger was Mir Hossein Mousavi. And it is interesting that even before the polls closed in Iran, Mousavi held a press conference in Tehran, and he said, I have won the elections. I mean, this to me sounds a little strange that, a person who has, in fact, good revolutionary credentials, is not as if he's, an outsider, And I want to, you know, mention to you, I've met him on two occasions. One when he was the prime minister, second when he was not the prime minister. Although after he was not the prime minister, he actually shunned much contact with people outside his very, very close circles. He wouldn't sort of, you know, he didn't want to give media interviews, he didn't want to meet other people and so on. And yet, you know, when this election was held, he, before the election closed on June the 12th, he issued a statement at a press conference that I've won the election.
Right.
Now, why do you think, you know, what would have happened, Brother Ali?
Well, it's very obvious that, you know, it is the Iranian people's right to decide the president and to decide the election. However, any fair observation to what's been happening before and during and after the election clearly expose the role of the Western media and Western government, you know, starting with the US and ending with France, about their attempt to really model and interfere with the Iranian internet business. For Mr. Mousavi to declare his victory even before the polls were closed, and we said earlier that in many locations in Iran, polls were extended for several hours up to midnight, and some of them were like beyond midnight to count the vote. Well, if you hold any democratic values, you know, at least you wait for the results to come out.
Exactly. Let's talk about the media coverage. Phil, you are in the media. I mean, you know, what struck you about the coverage both prior to the elections and, you know, after the elections, how they were covering the story in Iran?
Well, of course, the Western media is always looking like in a mirror to see who resembles themselves, and then they choose that person to be the obvious, the appropriate person in power. And so it turns into always a mini drama of how are our ideas advancing in this backward culture. They define everything outside their borders as backward. And then they report it as either tragedy or perhaps a glimmer of hope. So I noticed personally that there was this, what's the word, symbiotic. Yes, between the Western media and those who were supporting Mousavi, you'd see a large crowd of people holding up signs in English.
Exactly.
Saying,
that was very.
Where is my vote?
And that's very surprising. Exactly. Pardon? That's very surprising. That you know, I'm glad that you brought that point up. That, you know, in Iran, I mean, I know there are many friends of mine who used to study here in Canada and in the U.S. and they could speak very good English, but when we went back to, when I went to Iran to visit them, they would have difficulty speaking in English because they were so used to speaking in their own language.
Yes.
And in the rallies in Iran, people always carry their placards and slogans, etc., in Farsi. And it, here was Mousavi supporters holding, you know, signs
everybody
in English.
Is holding up signs in English. Yes. So in other words, this is about the United States and its allies. The Mousavi's supporters seem to think that the constituency that they wish to win over or be identified with is a Western English-speaking country.
Yeah. I want to make a point here that how quickly media switch their stance. Like, if you remember that before elections, and one more important aspect here is that we call it Western media, right? But I hope that there are healthy debates in the media, and Western media should also be able to challenge each other, right? If one station is saying something, then another should be saying something else. That's called freedom of speech or freedom of ideas. But it looks like that someone is controlling the whole Western media. So that the whole media was saying that nobody is going to turn out for the election, it's a fraud, and there's no democracy. And over the night, when the President Ahmadinejad was victorious, like, and then the whole media turned into that there's a rigging in the polling. So. It's not free media, right? We can see that. Otherwise, we should be seeing healthy debates or showing both points. And going back to Mir Hussein Mousavi's point, like, even Iranian friends, like, they are questioning that this guy, if he really wants to serve his nation and if he has any credibility in the people, then what has he done in the last 20 years? So nobody knew that after his premiership and till this day of election, what was his role? And why is expecting that everybody is going to, you know, vote for him?
Yes.
I think maybe we need to spend a little bit more time about the role of the media here.
Yes.
We know that the Western media are not a big fan of the Iranian system, revolutionary system, or Ahmadinejad himself. They have been in a mandate for the last, at least I remember, 10 years, you know, dehumanizing Ahmadinejad, you know, in the ugliest term they could have used. And also, it's not a matter of a free or not. I think the same corporate media is serving the agenda of the Western capitalist, you know, imperialist regimes. If we go back several years ago, it's the same corporate media was glorifying the occupation of Iraq, the occupation of Afghanistan, even, you know, bragging about being embedded. And we know now, the whole world know about the atrocities committed by those occupation from Abu Ghraib to Guantanamo Bay, and you don't find any apology from the same media. But let me turn it the other side, you know, and I know we'll have some discussion about other election shortly after this. In Lebanon, there was a clear evidence, you know, about Western and Saudi and other interference where close to $1 million was spent by one camp supported by the West. And, you know, almost the result was the same before the election, but the media, the same media, was portraying a huge victory for democracy.
Pro-West groups, that's exactly what they're saying.
But let me turn the table. Had the opposition, you know, demonstrated in the street and refused the result of the election, what would the position of those same media would be? Would they be in the support of the Lebanese people who actually voted by 200,000 votes more than the pro-Western guys? So what the same media corporate say? Well, this group got, you know, the highest popular vote, so therefore, you know, they are right.
Yes. It's interesting that you raise that point, because the Hezbollah-led alliance won 54.5% of the popular vote, and yet their total number of seats in parliament were 57, whereas the other side, which is referred to as the pro-Western or Western-backed alliance of March 14th, they had only 45% of the popular vote, and yet they got 68 seats in parliament, which of course still was two less than their outgoing total. And yet, you know, and as Ali mentioned, that, you know, the Saudi money that was used in the election to buy votes, etc., nobody talked about, you know, rigging elections over there. But I mean, I want to come to the Iran situation in the sense that what I have noticed, because I'm familiar with Iran, I've been to Iran many times, and the rallies that Mousavi's supporters were holding were all by people in North Tehran. Now, North Tehran, anybody who's familiar with Tehran itself would immediately tell you that North Tehran is the place where the middle, upper middle class, you know, university educated people live. But that does not mean that they represent the will of the entire people of Iran, because you can go to the south of Tehran and you would find out a very different kind of people, poor people who are staunch supporters of Ahmadinejad because he himself comes from there. He lives in South Tehran among the poor people. And then you go out into the countryside where the overwhelming majority of the population resides of Iran, and that's where Ahmadinejad's support comes from. But, you know, the thing is that perhaps deliberately, these Western journalists who, in any case, as Ali said, that, you know, they don't like the system in Iran, they want to denigrate it, and these journalists live in or stay in hotels that are in North Tehran. I'm sure some of you have probably been there, the Istiklal Hotel, the Azadi Hotel. In fact, I was looking at John Lyon of the BBC, and when I was sort of broadcasting from there, I said, well, I know this place, I've stayed in that room, because behind me is the Alborz Mountains, you can see them. Yeah. And so he's broadcasting from there, and he's reflecting everything from North Tehran, and these hotels are frequented not by ordinary people of Iran, these are by the rich people. Right. So they're simply reflecting that and bringing out their sort of prejudice.
That's at that point, I was thinking about the mirror. They go from New York or wherever to report, they land in Tehran, and then they look for someone like themselves, and preferably in a hotel.
Yes.
And then that's, they say, well, I'm here, geographically, and they're talking to someone very much like themselves, which is why people find it very hard to follow them. Why did the mass of the population go the other way?
Yes.
But you're right. I mean, in some ways, you know, the story of Iran or Tehran is that mountain. It's always been understood that at the top of the mountain, you find the wealthiest.
Yes.
At the bottom of the mountain, where you find the others. Mm-hmm. And they tend to outnumber the ones at the top. So if you give them a vote, they will choose someone like themselves.
Yes. Like, you know, there was a...
Go ahead. But if you examine any country or state, And, you know, you find the middle class and the upper class are the minority.
Oh, absolutely.
And society, of course. Country.
Yes.
And they are the ones who somehow dominate the political scene.
They can dominate.
So
yes.
What we have right now in Iran, it's like, you know, the majority of the poor and under middle class people, like, do not count or even do not exist, because only the agenda of the middle class, some of the middle class and upper class, that agenda should dictate. You know, that by itself shows the bias.
Yes.
You know, views and reports by the media.
And I think going back to media, it's not just like simplistic view of media. As you mentioned earlier, it's the whole corporate culture. So that media and the governments are hands in this conspiracy, right? So I would like to mention the Obama's visit to Saudi Arabia before Iran and Lebanon's election and his speech in Cairo, that he praised the wisdom of the king. So here on one hand, he is praising wisdom of a dictator, right? And he's not talking about any democracy or any human rights or so-called women rights in a country where women even deprived of car driving, right? So on one hand, he's praising the wisdom of a dictator, and there's no election in the entire region. The only election happening is in Iran and Lebanon and Palestine, and they don't agree with the results of any of those three. So instead of appreciating that those democracies which are, we are not saying they're perfect, but they're at least trying to do something. But we see only one-sided stories. So this media is actually part of that bigger corporate culture, which is controlling media and the human resources and all the wealth of the world, actually, not just the wealth of their own country. So they are sucking the blood of poor people in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq and all the African countries. So this is like, I call them partner in crimes, you know, because both ways, right?
Yeah. Now, you mentioned about the elections in Palestine. I mean, Phil, this is interesting because, you know, in January of 2006, you know, Hamas won the elections fair and square,
yes.
And yet Canada was the first country to cut off support to the Palestinians.
Yeah, they didn't applaud the fact that it was democracy, and they didn't respect the result.
Exactly. And although, you know, Jimmy Carter himself was there, he was an observer to the elections, and he said they were very fair. Absolutely, there was, you know, and in any case, Hamas was not in power. It was the Palestinian Authority, so Hamas couldn't do anything about it. They won that election. And we can even go further back to, you know, December of 1991, when they, in Algeria, the Islamic Salvation Front won the elections.
Yes.
The military was unleashed against them. 350,000 people
were punished for voting
for
an Islamic government.
Exactly.
They were punished, brutalized.
Yeah. So here we have a situation. I mean, have you seen any evidence, anybody has presented any evidence whether the elections in Iran were rigged, as they are saying? Is there any evidence, that any sort of proof that, you know, I mean, to rig an election, obviously you have
what
to have
I notice is that the dialogue is changing, that those who are trying to put pressure on the Islamic Republic are changing their arguments day to day.
In what way?
They said that the election was stolen. But
right.
Then when they're challenged, well, okay, let's have a look. They say, no, we don't trust. But you're part of a process, and then they get out. You can't do it that way. And then they say, well, the issue is freedom. Oh, wait a minute, I thought you were talking about the election. But they changed the subject. So,
so in other words, their agenda is...
This is not a serious debate about whether or not it was an honest election.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's sort of like, you know, when one looks at sort of, you know, the coverage of the sort of some of the major TV networks, both in North America as well as in Europe, for instance, the BBC, I was struck by sort of, you know, one of the falsehoods that they were perpetrating. On their website, they showed a picture of a rally. In which, I mean, you know, one of the things that I think one can see from the rallies that are being held in Tehran, that most of these supporters carry green flags, because that's his color. This is the sort of so-called green revolution.
It's a dubious business.
Exactly. Okay. You know, the color revolution, the orange revolution in Ukraine, and so on.
Using English language.
Exactly. Secondly, all of Ahmadinejad's rallies, in that you would see people waving Iranian flags, not, you know, any other color. They're waving Iranian flags. Now, the BBC website actually showed, you know, they said, here is a massive rally in support of Mousavi, and yet the people were waving Iranian flags in that. And what they had done was they had cut out Mousavi's picture from that. Then actually somebody pointed it out to them. Somebody sent an email to them. They said, you are misrepresenting the facts, that you are showing Ahmadinejad's rally as being one of Mousavi's rally. So after 24 hours, the BBC took it off their website. So you can see the distortion that they indulge in. Secondly, you can see what Fox News and CNN are doing. CNN is saying blood in the streets of Tehran. You know, Fox News says uprising in Iran. So, I mean, obviously, sort of, you know,
dramatizing the
whole everything is being dramatized. Like, you know, even, for instance, we saw the...
we're getting home videos with people shouting, and then someone sits in a studio in Atlanta, Georgia, and tells us what it's all about.
Exactly.
And I'm looking, and I see lights flashing, and I hear noise.
Yes.
And then I have this person saying what I saw. I mean, that's almost a magician. It's absurd.
Yeah, yes. But those videos and emails are coming from Tehran and widely supported by big internet service providers like Twitter and others. Which, you know, it's kind of very interesting to see that the Obama administration officially asked Twitter not to shut down its service for maintenance because they wanted to continue coverage. But not the same as courtesy was extended to the people of Iraq or to the people of Afghanistan or to the people of Palestine, even during the massacre. But to go back a little bit further about the media and the accusation of rigging, just 2 weeks, between 3 weeks and 3 weeks prior to the election, two pollsters from the Washington Post did their polling and also was supported by many other speculation that Ahmadinejad was in the lead. And
yes.
Was in the lead by margin 2-1.
Yes.
And even many of Western medias, when they were reporting about the election, yes, they were talking about the debate and the intensity of the debate and maybe issues being brought into this election, which rightly so, because not every single one demonstrating in the street with Musawi is against the Islamic Revolution or against the regime or against, you know, we know there are so many young people and they come with different expectations. But during the debate, they start focusing more on the platform of Mousavi and the pro-Western, the pro, etc.
Yes.
Which means, you know, they were preparing the stage, you know, to really distort the truth about the outcomes of the election even before the election has been announced.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows, you know, like their questionable interest. Yes. And keep in mind, this is the same media who were actually pushing to a certain extent to have a military action against Iran, you know, for
yes.
the last several years.
Incidentally, that's the background we have to worry about. I think one of the reasons we're talking about this is that this, unfortunately, can become the pre-stage to an assault on Iran, because you demonize and you say everything about them is false, that they lied about results, they lied about them, they brutalized. Well, what is your next option? And I see people again in the street with signs saying in English free Iran. Well, they can only be appealing for an external power, and I almost hear this, the footsteps coming with people supporting Mousavi saying they want an independent election to be held, which would mean somehow it suggests, you know, an international somebody to come in, which is the beginning of a takeover, a destabilization. But so, and you're quite right, there's a backdrop here of steady threats from Israel of a nuclear attack on Iran, and with the U.S. saying maybe, maybe not, but not saying no, but maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
And then you have an incident like this, and the people being played and being worked into a lather are actually the American and British and French audience who are being, there's an expectation, surely we're going to do something.
That's a very interesting point, and Leader mentioned in his last Friday speech that they are trying to tell you that there is there's an opportunity to free you. So he asked the people that look at in your neighbors, like look at Afghanistan, look at Iraq, and look
Pakistan.
At Pakistan now. He mentioned Pakistan first time.
Yes.
And said, look at
right.
these, that their American and Western powers came, you know, to free those people. And look at what's happening there. So if you have open heart and eyes and see what's happening, I mean, Iranian people should be really thankful.
Yeah, you know, this is interesting.
They are not in friendship with the U.S.
You know, after the Americans overthrew Saddam Hussein and sort of, you know, a year or so later, in Baghdad, in the cafes, there was a joke going around. They said, what is worse than being ruled by Saddam Hussein? And the answer was to be liberated by the Americans.
Right.
So I think, you know, the people of Iraq and Afghanistan and now Pakistan can see what Americans can do to them. But let me come back to this.
Because American liberation is eternal.
Exactly.
Right.
Is it to do with the white man burden? Yeah. And maybe we can add to it now the white woman pattern, because yeah. only the whites, the colonial whites, yeah. who are the expert in liberating
yes.
and providing freedom and democracy to the rest of the world.
Exactly. Exactly. I want to go back to what you had mentioned about the report that was published in the Washington Post on June the 15th. The two writers were Ken Balin of The Terror Free Tomorrow and Patrick Daugherty of the Strategy for the New American Century. Now they had,
and both institutions are not
exactly,
to the revolution.
Exactly, they are in fact backed by, like, you know, their members mm-hmm. include people like John McCain and some of the other right wingers in the U.S. So it's not as if there are people who are, you know, have any sympathy for Iran at all. But they said that there are two or three very interesting things that came out of their study. Number one, that, as you said, Ahmadinejad's support was 2-1 over Mousavi. Secondly, that his strongest support base was among the 18-24-year age group. Now, you know, here a lot of noise is being made about, you know, the youth supporting Mousavi. But what they are ignoring is that those youth are only in North Tehran. They're not talking about the whole country, because the rest of the population lives in the countryside. And the third thing they mentioned was, they said that, you know, Ahmadinejad had staunch support even among the Azeri population,
yes.
to which, from where Mousavi hails. And he said the reason for that is that during his presidency, he went and he provided support to the people. That, you know, Ahmadinejad in his last election campaign in 2005, he had said that he would put the oil wealth of Iran on the tables, on the, you know, the dining tables of the Iranian people. And that's what he did. He went into the countryside, he provided them loans. In fact, there was one incident, very interesting, that there are about 3 million Iranian women that are employed in the carpet weaving industry. They work at home. And of course, carpet is a big industry in Iran, but they had no insurance, and there was no law. Ahmadinejad actually introduced a bill in parliament to approve that, so that these women would get insurance, so that they can work at home. There's the 3 million poor women. And you see, so when the election time came, obviously these people came to vote for him.
People, we're always told that people based on their economic interests and how they, what they think the state is going to be, help them, protect them, etc. And we're told that's why Obama defeated Mr. McCain. McCain was a standing conservative, privatization, you're on your own kind of man. And they said, well, Obama won because he appealed to the poor and said, I'm going to do medical care, I'm going to increase wages, I'm going to increase employment. Exactly the reason everybody said he won. Well, that's exactly the reason Ahmadinejad won.
Yeah. I just want to add one quick point, because we are coming to the end of our time, and that was that although Obama has said that, you know, we are not involved in it, but in May of 2007, George Bush, when he was president, he signed an executive order authorizing $400 million to destabilize Iran. And there is a terrorist group in Pakistan, Balochistan, called Jundullah. They were involved in terrorist activities inside Iran. In fact, on May 28th, they planted a bomb in a mosque. They killed 25, 26 people. And this group, this Jundullah group, is even recognized by the Americans as a terrorist organization, and yet they are financing them. So there is a lot of interference that is
going on. And then on this note, you have MKO, right?
Exactly.
So the same party which was listed as a terrorist organization in Western countries, now France is giving a speech to that body, right?
Yeah.
And Mariam was speaking on last weekend,
yes.
and then immediately after that, you see the bomb blast in the Mausoleum of Imam Khomeini.
Yes.
So
right.
Now they are coming back, to utilizing those.
Okay, we have to end there, because, you know, we are out of time. But I want to thank each and every one of you, Fayaz, Phil, and Ali. You've been watching Muslim Perspectives. Thank you very much. I'm Zafar Bangash. And just one final point on Sunday, July the 5th, there is going to be a barbecue and picnic held at our center at the Islamic Society of York Region. You are all invited to that. It starts at 1 o'clock, and you know, we invite everybody, bring your families, and we hope that you have enjoyed the program. Thank you. I'm Zafar Bangash. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The opinions and beliefs expressed